Genesis 37. I heard of Joseph's dreams, and let's see. Re-enter this in verse 12. Now his brothers went to pasture their father's flocks near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." And he said to him, "Here I am." So he said, "Go now and see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring me word." No. So he sent him from the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And map time. Holy Land, Sea of Galilee, Dead Sea. Hebron is down here, and Shechem way up there. Remember, that's where they eliminated the men of the city of Shechem after the incident with Dinah. And set her free. She was being held captive. Verse 15, and a man found him wandering in the fields, and the man asked him, "What are you seeking?" 16, "I am seeking my brothers," he said. "Tell me, please, where they are pasturing the flock." And the man said, "They have gone away, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. Back to the map. Shechem, then over to Dothan. Not very far.
It wasn't like all in one day. You had to journey a ways.
Well, it's... What is the distance? Do we have a scale here?
I assumed it was like a field over, but it's more than that.
Why don't they put in mileage scales? 30, 40 miles. From southern Israel to northern Israel.
Okay, so he...
Not terribly long. A couple days.
Okay.
And Dothan would have been no more than a few hours' walk. So we pick up at verse 18.
They saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him.
This is a bunch of young men who are not civilized yet. And bad ideas occur, and yeah, they do bad ideas. We got three of us guys here. When you were a young boy, did you do bad ideas?
Yeah. It's called brotherly love.
And you didn't think them through.
But not fratricide.
Hey, there's more boys there. So the more boys, the worse idea.
Double the ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you think he had his coat of many colors on? Is that how they knew him from afar? I mean...
well, he is Joseph, who's bragging about everything and his dreams, and what do you think?
They were brothers from a different mothers.
So, verse 19.
They said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer."
Yeah. Okay. Verse 20.
"Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams."
You're the evil laugh.
Yeah, they're... When you were a young boy, did any of your brothers try and kill you? Mine did.
Oh, no.
He didn't like this new baby.
Oh.
Pillow over the face.
Oh, no.
Seriously?
Whoa.
Yep. Oh. Yep.
You're joking.
Nope.
How old was he?
I was just newborn, so he was a little over two. Yeah.
Apparently someone saw
found him. Yeah. Yes.
Because there you are. Was that the brother who was here Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
He's atoning.
He's sorry.
Okay. Verse 21.
When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. Let's not take his life, he said.
Oh. Okay, so intent matters here, right? It matters in verse 22. So verse 22.
He was the oldest son, right, Reuben?
I believe so, yes.
Don't shed any blood. Throw him into the cistern here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him. Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, throw him into the cistern. Let him starve to death.
Yeah.
And planning to come back later and pull him out and bring him home. Okay. Verse 23. Now we know whether he was wearing his robe of many colors. 23.
So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore.
Yep. And they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. What did they do after that? One sentence. One sentence of verse 25.
Sat down to eat.
Then they sat down to eat. Boom. Throw them in the pit, sit down to eat. And probably sat around eating near the pit so they could laugh and mock at him and ask him if he wanted any food. Because that's what boys will do to each other. Okay. Okay, verse 25.
Then they sat down to eat, and looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry it down to Egypt.
Okay, so gum, tree resin, balm, and that would be for healing, for putting on wounds. Myrrh, very, very expensive, and was a painkiller, and was used as a perfume. And they're on their way down to Egypt. Where are they coming from?
Coming from Gilead.
Yeah.
There's a bomb, Gilead.
And the map here takes the arrow back south of the Sea of Galilee and heads it out into the wilderness, not up north through Fertile Crescent, because myrrh grew in the Arabian wastes. That's where the trees for the myrrh could be cultivated. So they are traders. What are they called in here?
Ishmaelites.
Yep.
Hairy bunch of Ishmaelites.
So.
Or from Joseph and the Amazing.
Right. Yeah. I have that song running through my head.
So,
it's kind of bad.
Who are the Ishmaelites?
Okay.
Who are they descended from?
Ishmael.
Who is Ishmael?
Abraham's first son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Abraham's other son, Isaac's older half-brother. And that's who they are. And they are traders, going back and forth, plying the trade routes, bringing things from here to there and from there to here. And for their travels, They get to buy it at a certain price, sell it at a certain price, and it's worth it. Trading is very much worth it, and the great trade routes of the ancient world were extremely profitable. But in order to do the trade routes, you had to not only go and buy things and go and deliver them, you had to keep them safe along the way. Right? So you had to have enough armed men with you that you could defend your wares. And that's where a lot of the cost came in, of going back and forth and back and forth. And there's a reason why I'm bringing those considerations out. 26.
Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood?"
Ah, I wonder if Judah and Reuben had talked together. No, they didn't have the chance, because with all the other brothers there, how are you going to talk? So Judah is trying to save Joseph from being killed. Okay. Verse 27.
"Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh, and his brothers listen to him."
Let not our hand be upon him? Isn't it a bit late for that?
Haven't they already? Yeah.
Okay, so they're going to sell him to the Ishmaelites. And then verse 28.
"So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt."
Into the Lutheran Study Bible, just for a second. Midianite traders sold him to the Ishmaelites. Midianites were desert-dwelling descendants of Abraham through his wife or concubine Keturah. After Sarah died, remember, he had other sons through Keturah. The relation here with the Ishmaelites is unclear. Perhaps the Midianites and Ishmaelites intermingled, or there were both Midianite and Ishmaelite traders in the group to which Joseph was sold. At times, the two terms seem to be used interchangeably, as in Judges 8:22-28. Then it goes on. This point I disagree with. 20 shekels of silver was a typical price for a male slave during this era, attesting to the early second millennium context of the story. The price for slaves went up over time, as demonstrated in scripture and ancient literature. Coined money was not yet used, so this passage refers to the weight of silver paid. 20 shekels of silver. The shekel would have remained constant in terms of the weight, century after century. 20 shekels of silver, what's going on? How much would the Midianites have sold Joseph when they got to Egypt?
Higher.
Profit margin?
Mm-hmm.
So they would not have sold him for 20 shekels of silver, would they? Price of a slave. What's the price of a slave as attested in other portions of the Old Testament?
30.
30 pieces of silver, right? 30 pieces of silver, the fine price at which they priced me. That's in Zechariah. And it is a prophecy of the 30 pieces of silver with Judas. 30 pieces of silver was the price of a slave century after century after century after century, and because they were on the silver or gold standard, the prices didn't change wildly. They didn't inflate the currency and say, so and so many, this is worth a shekel of silver. Oh, and now it's going to be this many worth a shekel of silver. So we can print more and pay off our debts, and everybody who has savings of this and this many whatevers is suddenly poorer because we inflated the currency. Nice plan, isn't it? If you're the government.
Moses, he married a many people.
So the question is, mm-hmm. why are they buying him for 20 shekels of silver?
So they can make money.
Make a profit.
Yeah. What do you call the other 10? What do you call the other 10?
Profit.
There's a different thing that if you go on Amazon and buy something, you have this added to it.
The markup.
Taxes.
What do they call that? Not the taxes.
Shipping and handling.
Shipping and handling. Okay.
Not if you have Prime.
But, okay. 20 shekels.
From where they ship it.
20 shekels for the boy, 10 for shipping and handling, and a profit. And I want you to picture them haggling the price. What can you get for him? Well, it's 30 pieces of silver. That's the going price. 30 shekels, going price. What will you give us for him? Well, we have to this, we have to this, we have to this. You know, he's got to have food, he's got to eat, we've got to keep a watch over him. This is going to take some doing. And so, for our trouble and for, I think they could have driven a better price if they'd been better negotiators, the brothers. But they need to sell him quick.
Right.
And the Midianites know that they need to sell him quick. And
just like Maxwell Street. Just like Maxwell Street.
Yeah, no kidding.
You want to come upstairs and see the girls? The girls is Bruno, who's standing behind the door with a thing to whack you on the back of the head and take your wallet. If you go. I had a teacher take our class as a field trip to Maxwell Street. And one of the other kids in the class had that offer. Mm-hmm. And he comes back from having heard that offer, and his eyes are wide, and he's going, there's no girls up there, are there? And then it was, do you want to eat the Polish sausage that's there? You don't know because you don't know where they got it. Do you want to buy the jewelry there? Your sister bought a piece of jewelry there.
Turned her green, yeah.
Turned her skin green. It is not what it purports to be.
I know.
Maxwell Street down in Chicago that's no longer there, got closed up.
Must be a Chicago thing.
Yeah. Values.
Maxwell Street is notorious. You can find anything on Maxwell Street, but it isn't what you think it is. So we're on vacation, and we pulled into this place, and the guy was selling euros, and then he said, Maxwell Street, Polish. So I go and ask, will your Maxwell Street Polish make me sick? And he says, no. And I said, then it's not Maxwell Street Polish. You ever been to Maxwell Street? Okay. So, anyway, that's all well and good.
The University of Chicago bought up the property, and they closed them down and turned it into I don't know what.
And now it's become, what, a
gentrify.
Yeah.
No, the idea of Maxwell Street, the idea of Maxwell Street is not what it was. You know.
Maxwell Street was known everywhere.
Yeah.
Not in Southern Illinois.
It's.
Oh, I think they probably had heard about it.
How many of you here have been to Maxwell Street? You have? Yeah.
Many years ago.
Back in the day, huh?
I remember a whole lot of it, but I remember it being scary.
Yeah. There's no rules
there. So many people, and it was just shouting. And,
Yep. All those government regulations, not there. Yeah. Some of those government regulations are good.
We
like,
just decided it was a generational thing, and that's why we haven't heard of it.
No, it's talked about in this area on the radio and other things.
My parents grew up in Chicago, and I never heard of it. They never talked about it.
You're kidding.
They wanted to keep you from it.
Everybody.
Or they didn't go.
Everybody.
Right.
Everybody,
they probably didn't go.
Or most of the people that talk about it now talk about it as a fond memory thing. That was like a farmer's market.
Oh, okay.
Very large farmer's market where you could get all kinds of things there.
It was
no.
All Bohemian.
No.
So it was like
a
Denny's
grandparents.
A lot of you don't
know.
We're going to have Google it.
It's like a Soulard market where you wandered into the wrong section of town.
So what, did they take tin, polish it up, and try to pass it as silver?
Yeah.
Oh, that type of thing. Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So is that... Was that
counterfeit
Skid Row?
Goods?
Yeah. No, it wasn't Skid Row.
Polish sausage that some restaurant threw out the back door. And if somebody found it, they grabbed it up and sold it to people to eat.
Like,
you know, things like that.
Yeah, like where he takes the newspapers and resells them. Mm-hmm.
No, I mean the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just selling what's not really
there.
That was P.T. Barnum. Is that where he was from?
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, the Ringling Brothers were from Marquette, or McGregor, Iowa. Second post in my first parish. Yeah. So. Life. Okay, they... So 20 shekels of silver, they took Joseph to Egypt.
Well, would Joseph not have been arguing against this? I mean, is he sitting there being quiet while his brothers are bargaining?
What do you think?
Say, hey.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. You're my brother.
I'm worth more than that.
This is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Dream.
Yeah. Look at these soft hands. You're not going to get them to work along the way to Egypt. Yeah. 20, not 21.
Yeah.
They're gonna haggle, and his brothers are going to try and raise the price, and the Midianites are going to find everything wrong with him and keep on lowering the price. That's the way of it. 29.
When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where was he with all the...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Negotiating was going on.
He was gone.
Maybe he was with the
fox.
He didn't know he was in the cistern. Or, no, he knew he was in the cistern.
Didn't the Midianites...
Probably his turn to watch a sheep.
Yeah, they had all those flocks with them, so somebody had to be watching.
We're not told that information.
It certainly took a while.
Didn't the Midianites come along and... find him in the pit and sell him to the Ishmaelites?
No. It says they saw the Ishmaelites coming along, and then the name of that group that's coming along shifts back and forth between Ishmaelites and Midianites. The footnote in this study Bible suggests that there may have been intermingling, intermarrying, or... they may have been joining together in a business venture, and there were Midianites and Ishmaelites, and the Ishmaelites may have been guarding and the Midianites doing the trading, whatever. We don't have those details. But they're both consider them as one group, Midianites and Ishmaelites. And the brothers see them coming along, and they decide to sell Joseph. And so they're haggling with the Midianites after saying, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites. So it does get confusing back and forth between the two names.
It does kind of read, though. I mean, it does say, then the Midianite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Midianites drew him up?
No.
No, the brothers.
And
yeah,
they,
it doesn't necessarily.
And they drew
they,
Joseph up and lifted
to.
Him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites.
I can see where.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've always thought it was the brothers that
they
drew him
would
too,
be
but when
the.
You read it,
yeah, they would be the brothers that drew him
brothers?
Up.
Well, this
because the Bible
one
uses
does say his brothers
pronouns.
That one does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a step two interpretation.
Well, and then it says, sold them to the Ishmaelites. You know it's the brothers, because the Bible doesn't, you know, the Bible, we know that the brothers sold Joseph. So if the they was referring to the Midianites, then the Midianites had sold it to the Ishmaelites.
Which would explain why Reuben didn't know where they were.
But
we
know that, as the story goes on, we know
Reuben turned his back and...
Well,
by the time he turned back around, the brothers had sold him.
It was the brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not a very good way of
reporting
the story in this version.
This is one of the things with the Bible is that it does use the pronouns in a ambiguous way.
Yeah.
And now for the next month, listen to the readings and see how many of the pronouns and he said 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 and he said. Who?
And there's four different he's in there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
At least it doesn't say
too,
Z
and like,
Zoom.
What are you talking about? But do you know what I'm saying? If they were the Midianites, we know clearly that the brothers sold them into slavery. So that shows that they're talking about the brothers. Otherwise, it would be, and they drew Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels. So if you continued thinking they was for the Midianites, that would say that the Midianites sold them, and we know that's
mm-hmm.
not true.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the first part of chapter, verse 28, I don't understand why that is even important to be in the Bible.
That the
Midianite traders passed by.
Yeah.
Yeah, they came on by, and they took him out of. They said this as the Midianites were coming along, or the Ishmaelites, or the Midianites, whoever it is, Ishmaelites, Midianites, who cares which they are.
Yeah.
Maybe the Midianites looked at and said, oh no, he's too puny, we're going to keep going.
And they come along, and the brothers pull him out and sell him. And they took Joseph to Egypt. Who's they?
Ishmaelites.
It just keeps saying they.
Well, this, the footnote here says that it was possibly intermingled, Ishmaelites
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
Midianites together.
That's what I read before, yeah.
Yeah. So
they may have intermarried and...
ambiguous on purpose.
And they do business together. And
here's another thought. Maybe they came along and saw the cistern and they were going to draw water, not knowing it was empty, and saw Joseph down in there. And
oh, look in there, a perfectly good boy.
Yeah. And the brothers
somebody threw away a perfectly good boy.
With a flashy coat.
And he doesn't have his flashy coat.
Oh, that's right.
Because they stripped him of it. They. Okay. So, verse 30.
He went back to his brothers and said, the boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?
Now here's a different thought of how this could have played out. The Ishmaelites could have met the brothers just a stone's throw away having lunch. And then... after the sale, one or two of them go over and look and do the price haggle. The Midianites could have gone and fetched Joseph and taken him away. And Reuben then goes to look in the pit, not aware of what has gone on. And then he returns to his brothers. And this is all speculation. The boy is gone, and I, where shall I go? He doesn't want to go back to his father.
Then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in the blood.
No DNA back then.
That's right.
32 is even more underhanded.
They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe."
Because they could have just pretended like he never showed up. Instead, they made their father, right, believe that it was.
And they don't go and say, "We found Joseph's robe." No, they say, "Please identify this robe."
That's pretty cruel.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, unless they really did it because they were in their own way ticked off at Dad because it was so obvious his favorite was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and see that's, whether it's your son's robe.
That's probably.
Yeah.
Your son.
But that's probably part of what's going on is they're
being
cruel to their dad.
No, he never showed up. What are you talking about?
Particularly said they found the robe. They could have burn the robe and say they don't know
unless
where
they thought
he is.
He would continue to keep looking for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He probably would have sent them out to find him or something.
Let's get this over with. We've got enough of this guy.
33.
And he identified it and said, "It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces."
Okay, so they make him draw the conclusion. Instead of saying a wild animal got him, they
and
make him
the guilt of being the one who sent him out to go check on his brothers too.
Yeah. 34.
Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days.
Yeah, they saw the beginning of that. They didn't see the full extent of it, I don't think. 35.
All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "in mourning I will go down to the grave to my son." So his father wept for him.
And his father stayed in mourning from then on until...
For years and years.
Yeah. And finish the chapter.
Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard.
Yep. And the haggling.
Which is how God planned it all along.
Yeah. Okay. So... meanwhile, back at home, chapter 38, verse 1. It happened at that time that Judah went down from his brothers and turned aside to a certain Adullamite whose name was Kira. There Judah saw the daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua. He took her and went into her. Verse 3.
And she conceived and bore a son, and he called his name Ur.
No, somebody asked her what the name of the son was, and she said, and then they, okay, that's the name. Verse 4.
She conceived again and gave birth to a son and named him Onan.
Mm-hmm. Yet again she bore a son and she called his name Shelah. Judah was in Chazeb when she bore him. Okay. Verse 6.
Judah got a wife for his firstborn, and her name was Tamar.
But Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord put him to death. That's the way to pray for your children. Verse 8.
And Judah said to Onan, go into your brother's wife and perform the duty of a brother-in-law to her, and raise up offspring for your brother.
Oh?
That's a duty.
Who wants verse 9?
But Onan knew that the offspring would not be his. So whenever he went into his brother's wife, he would waste the semen on the ground so as not to give offspring to his brother.
No. Verse 10.
And what he did was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and he put him to death also.
Oh.
Wow.
So and Onan are dead. There's Shelah. Then Judah said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow in your father's house till Shelah, my son, grows up. For he feared that he would die like his brothers. So Tamar went and remained in her father's house. This is a weird story.
Mm-hmm. I know, I'm like, where's he going with this?
Verse 12. Oh, wait. In the course of time, the wife of Judah, Shua's daughter, died. When Judah was comforted, he went up to Timnah to his sheep shearers, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. 13.
And when Tamar was
told,
your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep.
Well, what did she do? Verse 14.
She took off her widow's clothes, covered herself with a veil to disguise herself, and then sat down at the entrance to
Aname,
which is on the road to Timnah.
Mm-hmm.
For she saw that though Shelah had now grown up, she had not been given to him as his wife.
Oh.
We grew up awful fast.
Well, it's been a while.
It went by fast.
In the writing of this chapter, the years are passing pretty quickly. Verse 15.
When Judah saw her, he thought she was a prostitute, or she had covered her face.
Okay. Verse 16.
He turned to her at the roadside and said, come, let me come into you, for he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. She said, what will you give me that you may come into me?
The wording.
Yeah, I like my wording better. It's just, let me sleep with you.
Yeah. 17.
He answered, I will send you a young goat from the flock. And she said, if you give me a pledge until you send it.
And I'll pay you tomorrow for
her services today.
Today,
yeah.
Does not speak well of his character in multiple ways.
Yep.
He's not only being immoral, he's being cheap at being immoral.
He's spiraling.
It's Judah. Yeah, you
know?
Yep.
Judah.
Mm-hmm. Just tells us they're as screwed up back then as we are today.
Yeah. Exactly. We're like, oh, okay, exactly. We're not as bad as we thought.
No, we're just as bad as we thought. Mm-hmm. They were too, though.
Okay, verse 18.
He said, "What pledge shall I give you?" She replied, "Your signet and your cord and your staff that is in your hand." So he gave them to her and went into her, and she conceived by him.
Verse 19.
I know, I'm trying to keep the what's going on.
Street. That's her father-in-law.
That's her
Tamar.
The son that died quite a while ago.
Yeah,
right.
It's her father-in-law,
the father
of Ur, who was married to her and died because he was wicked, and Onan, who would not cooperate with giving her children, and he was wicked and he died, and Shelah, who was supposed to then be married to her, but he was all grown up and Judah was chintzing out on the deal. And now Judah is widowed, and there she is playing the prostitute, and he's not very moral.
Does she know who he is?
Oh,
oh
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just wait for it.
Okay.
Okay. Did we read verse 19?
No.
Okay, verse 19.
Then she arose and went away, and taking off her veil, she put on the garments of her widowhood.
So
she's been wearing widow's clothes for all these years?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Does that give her a certain standing?
Nope.
I mean, is there a reason?
Well, she is
not
a
available.
Widow and not available and waiting for the Shelah to grow up and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting.
He must have aged well back then.
Well, I don't think those boys were too far apart in age either.
Oh, okay.
You know, because it keeps saying she conceived and bore a son, she conceived and bore a son, then she conceived again and bore a son. So they might have been like Irish twins, they might have been really close in age.
There's more to be revealed real soon. When Judah sent the young goat by his friend the Adullamite, he actually did, to take back the pledge from the woman's hand because he wants his signet ring and his other stuff back, he did not find her. Okay. Verse 21. This gets interesting.
And he asked the men of the place, "Where is the cult prostitute who was at Anaim at the roadside?" And they said, "No cult prostitute has been here."
Cult prostitute?
C-U-L-T?
So,
yeah.
So, this would have been in Judah's mind, not only a prostitute, but a prostitute associated with the worship of an idol.
Yeah. My Bible says shrine prostitute.
Mm-hmm. So.
Same difference.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. So he was cheating on
everyone.
And he was cheating on God.
Mm-hmm.
Yipes. Mm-hmm. These sons of Jacob. Okay. Verse 23.
And Judah said, "Let her keep what she has, or we will become a laughingstock. After all, I did send her this young goat, but you didn't find her."
Uh-oh. Now, here we are, verse 24.
About 3 months later, Judah was told, "Your daughter-in-law, Tamar, is guilty of prostitution, and as a result, she is now pregnant."
Okay.
So I got to go on. Judah said, "Bring her out and have her burned to death."
Oh. Wow.
Yep. Her delicious little scheme is coming to fruition. Verse 25.
As she was being brought out, she sent a message to her father-in-law. I am pregnant by the man who owns these, she said, and she added, see if you recognize whose seal and cord and staff these are.
Okay. And the other shoe drops. Wow.
That was a big movie. Yeah, good movie. They
should
make a movie. Verse 26. Then Judah identified them and said, she is more righteous than I, since I did not give her to my son, Shelah, and he did not know her again.
Okay. You know what no means.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Ah, 27.
When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb.
Wait a minute, weren't there twin boys all along?
Yeah.
No. Okay, this is before ultrasound.
I was going to say, in those days, they didn't know until they were born.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Verse 28.
And when she was in labor, one put out a hand, and the midwife took and tied a scarlet thread on his hand, saying, this one came out first.
Oh? Mm-hmm. Well, that's different. Verse 29.
As he drew back his hand, behold, his brother came out. And she said, what a breach you have made of yourself. Therefore, his name was called Perez.
Okay. Which means a breach. Verse 30.
Afterward, his brother came out with a scarlet thread on his hand, and his name was called Zerah.
Perez and Zerah. So, okay, and that...
Zerah means brightness, according to the study Bible.
Really?
Scarlet
and brightness.
Or brightness.
Probably an allusion to the scarlet thread.
Mm-hmm.
So was Judah involved in Dinah's?
No, that was Reuben and who else was it? Gotta look back.
Very.
I know, I'm trying to process it.
They shouldn't have had so many kids.
All at the same time.
Simeon and Levi were the two. Not Reuben. Simeon and Levi. Mm. Okay. You know, brothers will defend their sister's honor.
So.
And these brothers, they go too far. Repeatedly. Meanwhile, down in Egypt, chapter 39, verse 1.
Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there.
Okay. Probably 30 pieces of silver. It's 20 pieces plus shipping and handling. Verse 2.
The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master.
Mm-hmm. And he learned some humility. Verse 3.
When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did.
Mm-hmm. Verse 4.
So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had.
Okay. Verse 5.
From the time that he made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field.
Yeah. So the guy lucked out. Is he going to keep on with his luck?
Yeah, because he had bad luck with who he married.
Verse 6.
So he left in Joseph's care everything he had, with Joseph in charge, and he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome.
Okay, so didn't concern himself about anything except the food he ate.
What a life.
Yeah. He didn't have to do anything.
That is one servant.
Yeah.
One heck of a servant.
And his riches grew. Sounds
mm-hmm.
like. It sounds like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
And according to this, he looked good, too.
7.
And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me."
Yeah, she likes this muscular, well-formed Hebrew rather than old Potiphar, who's just concerned about his food.
He's probably getting fatter by the moment.
Right, there you go. He's not concerned about anything, including his wife.
Yeah, yeah.
Chilly, really.
Fat and lazy.
Okay, verse 8.
But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Verse 9.
No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?
Interesting last thought there, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Joseph recognizes his situation. He's learned humility. He knows where the blessings are coming from. He understands that he could be in a much worse situation, and it is only by the hand of God that he has had all of these blessings. And if he transgresses against his master, then he is sinning against God. Not only is he sinning against his master by taking what his master has not said he can have, in fact, it's wrong, marriage, everything like that, but he would be sinning against God by disrespecting all of the blessings and wanting to take more besides.
Hmm. That sounds like the Garden of Eden.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Theme seems to come back over and over again, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Those who are blessed, incredibly blessed, reach out and take the one thing that crosses the line. It's stunning.
Yep.
And it is a part of our nature.
Mm-hmm.
And God comes and he does blessing after blessing after blessing, and I want that. There is a Dr. Seuss story, The Grinch and the Hoobops?
Yeah, something.
Yeah. Where the Grinch, that you know from other stories, comes along and there's these Hoobops that are enjoying the sun and everything else, and he says, "But this little piece of string is better than all of that." And he manages to sell this little piece of string to them. It's fairly short and quite entertaining to read to the granddaughters and grandsons and aunt. Um, Verse 10.
And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her.
Mm-hmm. Steering clear, steering very clear. But he can't say anything to his master, can he?
No.
No, because he doesn't want to hurt him by tattling on what his wife is doing. Right?
And would his master believe him, or would he think, now you're after more? Mm-hmm. Okay.
And yet, if you were after, why would you tattle? Mm-hmm. So maybe he should have.
No. Should have what?
Told the master.
Oh, told him. Mm.
You know what I'm saying? If it kept up, or say, listen, you don't knock it off, lady.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tattle on you. Or don't even give her that ultimatum, just... knock it off. Just go tell them.
Okay. Verse 11.
But one day, when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house.
Whoa.
Uh-huh. That was a mistake.
Yeah. And there's only so long that you can avoid that situation and make safeguards all the way along the way. And there will come that gap in your protection. 12.
And she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house.
Verse 13.
When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house.
Verse 14.
She called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed." Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. After it was gone, she screamed. Verse 15.
And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house.
16.
She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home.
17.
And she told him the same story, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came into me to laugh at me."
18.
But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house.
Oof. 19.
As soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled.
Yep. Hasn't been paying attention, and now all of a sudden he's getting it wrong. 20.
And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison.
And this is not in a local jail. This is federal penitentiary.
I was just gonna say, yeah, state penitentiary.
Yeah, this is because Potiphar is the captain of the guard. Okay.
So he didn't try to defend himself, or is it one of those things that a woman, especially of such high rank, would be just, that would be crazy for her to be so brazen, right? Or,
well, how can a slave?
They'd always say, "Oh no, it had to be you because you're the guy."
You're a slave. Your word doesn't count.
Oh.
Your property.
Gotcha.
Is Potiphar going to profit after this? Doubtful. His good times are at an end.
I almost feel like, did he necessarily, I mean, he had to do what he did because of the standing of his wife versus the standing of his slave.
Right.
But did he maybe in the back of his, because it seems like he would have had him executed right there.
Right.
Did he maybe doubt his wife a little bit, and that's why he sent her? I mean, he had to know what her character was like.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but we hear no more about him. Potiphar is completely out of the picture.
Now his well has run dry.
But we've got just a few more verses to finish the chapter. Verse 21.
The Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden.
Oh. Okay. So God keeps on blessing him. 22.
So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there.
Okay. They keep on putting things under his control.
It's like going to school for his job that's coming up.
And 23.
The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed.
He just sat around 8 too.
Could be.
Watched his wife.
Yeah.
The pants won't eat with any person alone.
The Vice President Pence's policy. He will not go out to a dinner alone with a woman unless his wife is there.
That's just smart. Yeah.
Smart. No, like lies can be told about him either. You know?